Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with David Halperin, a former White House speechwriter and senior policy advisor for Howard Dean, who was counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. We will discuss the challenge Obama faces in reviving and reawakening the youth vote and the extent to which trying to ease the growing burden of student loans and extending health care coverage will activate the dormant student movement. Then we'll go to the Democratic Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, and speak with Colin Carle, a former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense and advisor to the Barack Obama presidential campaign, about what role foreign policy, which was barely mentioned by Romney and Ryan in Tampa, will play at the Democratic Convention. Since national security, which has traditionally been a Democratic weakness, is considered one of the president's greatest strengths, we'll look into how much it counts when jobs and the economy are on most people's minds. Then finally, with Monday's death of the right-wing Korean cult leader, the Reverend Moon, we will examine the shadowy connection of black money behind the Unification Church, which was founded with the help of the Korean Central Intelligence Agency. Stephen Hassan, a former member of the Moonie cult, who is now the founder of the Freedom of Mind Resource Center, joins us to discuss how Moon and his shadowy backers help fund the Christian right in this country. Joining us now is David Halperin, who's a senior fellow at Republic Report. He was previously founding director of Campus Progress, senior vice president of the Center for American Progress, senior policy advisor for Howard Dean's presidential campaign, founding executive director of the American Constitution Society, White House speechwriter and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton, and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Halperin.
Thanks, Ian. How are you?
Pretty good. And we've spoken, of course, about student loan debt and the for-profit college racket in this country as a kind of bipartisan shame. But I wanted to sort of broaden it out a little bit, if we could, about, in general, how does the president revive that extraordinary youthful spirit that appeared back in 2008 with the promise of hope and change. The impression I get is that the student movement is somewhat dormant, and I'm wondering whether issues like student loans, and the president recently said he just recently paid off his student loans. I'm wondering how and where the president is connecting with his former base.
Well, when you do talk about young people, I just met with a group of young people this week, students who are currently in college. I was running a youth organization for many years, and now I'm not doing that. So there's a chance to get together with some young people, ask them if they were excited about the election. Not a single hand went up. So I think it is a time of uncertainty for young people, and that does hurt President Obama, who got so much of his energy and many of his votes from young people in 2008. But I do think it's not just young people across the board. This is an election where there's real risk that our American economy is going down and not necessarily coming back up. We don't have the sense that people are inspired, and there's just a lot of cynicism. I think that President Obama has done a pretty good job as president. I look at a lot of these things through the prism of whether special interests are dominating Washington or whether you're standing up to special interests and protecting people's interests. I think President Obama's done an okay job with that. I think, on the other hand, Mitt Romney is almost money in politics personified, and he's all about almost unabashedly advancing the interests of corporations and wealthy. And I think that it's hard to get excited about that message as much, and especially against the backdrop of a bad economy. But I do think that people, in my view, need to think about very hard about this election and the importance of voting. And if you want to see it as lesser of two evils, you can. But I think, you know, if you look at, for example, Matt Taibbi's new article in Rolling Stone and many other things, Mitt Romney, it's almost like electing Gordon Gekko, the corporate raider president of the United States.
Well, I'm surprised that given the overt cynicism of Romney and Ryan, particularly the extent to which they both lie, and Romney's cynical appeal to the Republican voters in Tampa, where he made the joke that President Obama's promised to stop the oceans rising and heal the planet, and I'm going to take care of you and your family. That, of course, flies in the face of this candidate we see on stage with all of his grandchildren who will clearly be affected by global warming. And I would have thought that, you know, a lot of young people today must be concerned about the environment. Again, what's the disconnect between the overt cynicism expressed by Ryan and Romney and the young vote nowadays far more cynical?
I think young people want a job, want to believe that they can get a job when they get out of college, they don't have to go back and live with their parents. I think Mitt Romney actually made that comment, that it would be a sad thing for young people to have to move in with their parents. And they're looking for the candidate who can get them out of their parents' house and into the kind of careers and futures that their parents had when they were growing up, or even seeing their parents feeling restored to a sense that they can have to get their careers back on track. So I think that in some ways ideology goes away when you're facing these hard economic times. My message is that many of our economic problems could be solved if, in fact, we had a leader who could stand up to the lobbyists who dominate Washington right now on issues like health care, the environment, education, and say that, for example, leaders say they're conservatives, but then they engage in things like we've talked about, like giving $32 billion a year to for-profit colleges. Many of them are scams. So they're looking for, I think that if you had a leader who said, we're tired of this business as usual, we're not afraid of the corporations, then you actually could start to solve some of the tougher issues. When we're giving out subsidies to oil companies, it makes no sense when we have a budget crisis to be rewarding companies that are producing global warming and are making plenty of money already. So I think that standing up in a way to that, and I think the only way that's going to happen, though, is if voters stand up. If they go to the town hall meetings this fall and meetings with the big candidate debates and say, for example, do you stand with the oil companies or do you stand with a clean energy future? Do you stand with students and veterans who have been hurt by for-profit colleges, or do you want to keep standing with the for-profit colleges? The problem in Washington is that when members of Congress vote, they know the lobbyists who give the money for their campaigns are watching. They don't always think that voters are watching. And that's citizens are going to have to take a much stronger role in our democracy if we're going to solve our economic problems.
So, David Halpern, it was Paul Ryan in his speech at the Republican convention who mentioned kids staying at home and staring up at the fading posters of Obama on the wall.
Yeah, incorrect. That's right. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm just going to point out that at least the posters are still on the wall. So I mean, they may have lost interest, or he may not have rekindled the passions of 2008, but the posters are still up there. Is that to say what you've just said, David, that the President Obama needs to take off the gloves in terms of him being somewhat equivocal about Wall Street? He never really took on Wall Street, and then the Tea Party ran away with that issue. He's never really pointed out, I mean, he has, I suppose, in his ads, how much Mitt Romney is an exemplar of the 1%. But do you think that if he started to draw the clear lines that you're talking about, you're either for the oil companies or for the environment, do you think that would play?
I mean, I think it would fire up the base. There are the people who are really just looking for a job. This might not be the moment that will tip the election for Obama. I think for the people in the middle, I think he's got to give them something to believe in. You know, when you talked about the event you're doing with Lanny Davis and Michael Steele, you know, a bunch of people coming out and saying that the extremes are bad, the middle is good. Those guys are corporate lobbyists. We covered an event recently in D.C. by the Bipartisan Policy Center. Former members of Congress saying, what happened to moderate Democrats? All the people speaking were corporate lobbyists. Often, you know, there's nothing wrong with corporations. There's nothing wrong with capitalism as far as I'm concerned. The problem is when they take extreme positions. And I think, yeah, if Obama pointed out some of these and pinned them on Romney, like Romney saying for-profit colleges are the future, or that we should restore windfall, you know, handouts to the student loan companies that made no sense, he's just doing that because the student loan companies are also America's biggest banks. Maybe if he picked some fights on those things and highlighted that Mitt Romney really sees no problem with the government basically being in business to make capitalists more rich without worrying about the consequences for jobs, the economy, that, yeah, that could make some people a little bit more motivated to vote and maybe make some people in the middle see that Romney really is, more than any Republican candidate I can think of, just the personification of money in politics. He would say that Mr. Howell from Gilligan's Island is just kind of low rent because he didn't earn enough money. And then maybe Gordon Gekko from the movie Wall Street is in his league, but maybe not. Romney is just someone who, through his business practices, suggests to me that he wouldn't really understand the purpose of being the president. The purpose of being president is not just to make money for rich people, it's to grow our entire economy.
Well, what's always puzzled me about him is that Romney is, he's not clear about why he wants to be president, and it feels like it's all about ambition without purpose, just another, notch in the resume. But you certainly got my attention with the UCLA Hammer Forum I'm doing a week from today on searching for the center, the idea that I've got a couple of corporate lobbyists masquerading as centrists.
Go look up Lanny Davidson. Look what he's done. I mean, he represents the for-profit colleges. He represented African dictators. He's almost notorious, and he'll call me after this because he always, whenever you say anything about him, he jumps on you, and the reporters all know this. But he's basically, there's couple of New York Times and other articles that will catalog the extreme positions that he will take on behalf of clients for money. His politics, his personal politics may be great, but that's not what he does with his day job.
Right. So I've got the wrong guys there to talk about the center, because I've always understood that the center was what determines presidential elections in this country. And it's supposedly not playing much of a role in this particularly heated partisan environment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the center between what's left and what's right is necessarily, the right policy for our country. What I would like to see are more rational debates on the merits rather than what we have in Washington so often, which is the more powerful interests have more money for fancier lobbyists, TV ads running all day long on their issues, like you see now ads all the time for energy from the oil companies and the American Petroleum Institute. And you don't have actual rational, interesting debates. I think that, a lot of people on the conservative side who believe in small government would be concerned if they really knew how much John Boehner's House of Representatives is about handouts to special interests and wasting money on things that we don't need. To me, a lot of our interesting debates and important debates are not going on because everything is skewed by big money, by TV ads, and by the candidates' fear that they won't get campaign contributions they need unless they do what corporations say. And again, I love capitalism. Some of my best friends are capitalists. I've worked in private sector, but the problem is when they seek unfair advantage. It skews the process and skews the law, so it is not a level playing field for people to compete. And it's all about, the wealth runs through Washington almost rather than through, our manufacturing centers or even through Wall Street. And that's, I think, ultimately why Mitt Romney wants to be president, not just to put on his resume, but because it's the ultimate way for him to make him and his friends rich, and he thinks that's good for America, but I don't think he's looking at the details.
Well, the case that you're making, I think, David Halpern, is a very powerful case. But I guess Obama's not a populist, right? He's a centrist, or what is he?
Is a progressive, but who realizes that he's hemmed in by certain realities, such as GOP controls the House. It almost effectively controls the Senate. Even when the Democrats had a bigger margin in the Senate, it was hard to get the votes he needed for things. And that he would be, if he pushed too hard for the progressive agenda, that he would ultimately be seen as an unrealistic and failed president. So he's got to try. And again, also my critique would be, you know, there's too much cozying up to lobbyists, many of whom are Democrats, former members of his administration and the Clinton administration, lobby for extreme positions, and sometimes he gets swayed by that. But I think that President Obama at least understands what the issues and challenges are and would like to, best he could, do the right thing. And I think 25 years ago when I was growing up and first getting interested in these things, there were plenty of Republicans I would say the same thing about. At this point, I think the party has left America, and it's made up of two things, extremists and completely cynical corporate lobbyists who will do anything for money, or politicians who will do anything to suck up to the lobbyists for money, and then will someday themselves become lobbyists.
So the subject that we've discussed a lot, the for-profit college racket, David Halpern, that's the tip of this Republican notion. I know it's a bipartisan disgrace with lobbyists on both sides, but my understanding is that this is a part of essentially a Republican model about privatizing, in this case, privatizing education, where you essentially open up the treasury for a raid. Anybody can put up a shingle and say they're this, that, and the other. And, it's kind of like what Halliburton was to the jobs that the Army used to do for itself. And the state of Louisiana apparently has modeled its Department of Education reform, in quotes, on this for-profit model. They're offering up charter schools now to churches, and even for-profit businesses could form vocational training schools and essentially have indentured labor. So I see it as a kind of a part of that overall idea that the government is there to be raided by your friends, as opposed to be, as the social democracies operate in the rest of the world, or the developed world, where you pay your taxes and you get your government services.
That's right. But the thing, they call it free market. The Republicans say we like for-profit colleges, it's free market. It's not free market when 90% of the money comes from federal taxpayers. If that's going to be the case, I don't even have a problem with for-profit colleges shaking things up, competing with the private colleges and the state colleges. The problem is there are no rules. There are no rules to ensure that the money is spent on actually helping students to train and get jobs. In the absence of rules, it's what we call a race to the bottom. They're trying to please their shareholders who are watching. They have no incentive to help their students who are powerless and don't have the information they need, and they don't have to please the government because there are no rules. That's why we advocated at the beginning of the Obama administration there ought to be some rules. When the president tried to implement them, the for-profit colleges took the tax money that we provided them and hired the best lobbyist money could buy to gut the rules. What was left of the rules, they went to federal court with the most expensive lawyers in America, the ones who represented President Bush in the Bush v. Gore case, and they got the judge to invalidate the entire rule. So there are very few rules still in place, and even those rules that do exist, they figured out ways to systematically circumvent them in ways that make things even worse for students. So the $32 billion we spend a year in for-profit colleges, frankly, many of the schools are scams. A few of them are good out of that $32 billion. But it's worse than throwing the money in the river, because in the process we're ruining the lives of students who, breaking their hearts, who promised all kinds of dreams from these schools, end up often with no job. Some of the schools are good, but often with no job, and often deep in debt that can't be discharged in bankruptcy. Their lives are ruined. So that kind of cynicism is what goes on in that sector, and there are a few things as blatant as that, but there are many examples of that where things that just don't make sense for the American people are going on because of the power of lobbyists, and often these are monsters that our government has created by giving them so much tax money that they're in this position. And the notion that that kind of arrogant industry can be created and created before our eyes in Washington is something that more citizen involvement in our democracy can do something about stopping. We are going to defeat the bad for-profit colleges, and eventually, because that kind of thing just cannot stand, and we ought to be able to fight against these other special interests so that we can actually have a real democracy and a strong economy. But it takes vigilance, and it takes people taking action, making phone calls, confronting their members of Congress, writing letters to the editor, or we're not going to have real change in this country.
Well, thank you very much for joining us here today, David Halperin.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with David Halperin, who's a senior fellow at Republic Report. He was previously founding director of Campus Progress, senior vice president at the Center for American Progress, senior policy advisor to Howard Dean's presidential campaign, founding executive director of the American Constitutional Society, White House speechwriter and special assistant for national security affairs to President Clinton, and counsel to the Senate Intelligence Committee. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back in a moment, joined by a presidential advisor to the Barack Obama presidential campaign.